I am Thabo Mufamadi, the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance for the National Assembly. We have in our midst here Honorable Ntombikayise Sibidla. She happens to be our whip in the committee. And we have Honorable Mthethwa at the back. We also have Honorable Madlamini. We also have Honorable Adams. May Adams. She's just sitting at the back here. And Honorable Kurenov is a member of the Finance Committee, but is also from the political party that is known as COPE. We have received some apologies because of the tight schedule, you know, of our parliamentary programs. Two members are not around, some of them on study leave, Des Van Rooyen and Stan Mutimele. Honorable George, I'm told, is preparing for his presentation this afternoon. That's a member of the committee but representing the DA. It's not in today. Some probably would walk in as we continue our deliberations. I thought I should just make a brief comment before I hand over from our side to your side, just to know who's here. So that we can be able to exchange ideas, of which I think is the purpose of our interactions. We are a standing committee on finance of the fourth democratically elected parliament of South Africa. Maybe it will also be important just to indicate that probably in your interactions you have visited the National Council of Provinces, the house, another house, that deals specifically with matters of provincial interest, so that the National Assembly does not only run with programs that may undermine provincial interest. As you know, that South Africa has got a system that recognizes three spheres of government, equally important, independent, but interrelated. In the National Assembly, before this fourth democratically elected parliament, you had a standing committee on finance or a portfolio committee on finance, which would have dealt with almost everything, including macroeconomic policy matters and appropriations of finances or budget. Towards the end of the third term, a new bill was then processed through Parliament, and that bill was about the ability of Parliament to can amend the money bill. Because for the past 15 years, once the executive had agreed on the priorities and the allocation of resources, Parliament could not amend the money bill. So it was a fait accompli when it comes here. But as you know, South Africa has a very interesting history, a history of people's participation in every aspect of life. Over the years, organized labor, civil society, NGOs have been calling for a people's budget. At what point would people's views be taken into consideration and to be factored into the processes of budget and budget outcomes? That call, finally, the ruling party acceded to, the African National Congress. And saw the need that Parliament, as a representative body of all the people of South Africa, is a better place to can process those views, interests, so that they can be reflective or reflected in the budget as it tabled in Parliament and passed. And therefore the Money Bill and Related Matters Act was then promulgated and passed by Parliament. Through that bill, two committees were then established, the committee, Standing Committee on Finance and Standing Committee on Appropriations in the National Assembly. Similarly, in the National Council of Provinces, you do have those two committees. Now, we are a Standing Committee on Finance. Mr. Sogoni is the chair of another committee, Standing Committee on Appropriations. But from time to time, how we work, we try to synergize our programs as committees, particularly in the National Assembly. Today, they will not be able to join us in this meeting from the appropriation side, precisely because you should be aware that you came at a very, very busy moment for the National Assembly. We are working towards rounding off the fourth quarter of the fourth parliamentary session. And the budget, the medium-term budget policy statement has just been tabled by the Minister of Finance. I'm sure you've seen that and you've heard many comments about it. And that budget is now referred to the Committee for Appropriations once it's tabled. So they are seized with a very, very tight program that must run probably until the 12th of November so that we are able to report back to Parliament our findings and our observations and recommendations in terms of the budget itself. What does this act do to Parliament? The media, the public, everybody is interested on how is Parliament going to exercise its responsibility now that it has got the powers to can amend the Money Bill. Where we are, we have not yet arrived at a position where we can fully amend the Money Bill. We are still in the process of implementing the bill itself, because it's quite an involved exercise. I normally give an example of our PFMA, Public Finance Management Act, which was passed in 1996. It took us almost probably more than 8 years to can implement every facet of that act. We are just now beginning to review certain portions or aspects of that act so that it can be amended to factor in certain programs that we might have left out at the time it was passed. Now, we have established an internal committee, we call it a political committee, that is led by the House Chairperson Mr. Obed Bardella, chairpersons of finance committees, that's myself, the chair of the appropriation committee, and the two chairs in the National Council of Provinces. And also National Treasury does participate in the discussions and deliberations of how to phase in certain aspects of the law, so that we can all work in such a manner that we assist and complement the work of the executive at the same time, not just to be a watch dog in terms of our responsibilities. If we have time, we'll then take you through on how that piece of legislation is going to be implemented, but also what actually is the responsibilities and the focus of this committee. I thought I should just give you that background before I pass over to your, the leaders of the delegations on the other side. We really welcome your visit to our country, to our democratically elected parliament. There are many things that we can learn from you, and there are many things that you can learn from us. More than anything else, parliament is not just about representing the interest of the people that elected it. It is also about facilitating people-to-people relationships in the continent and internationally. We'll be very, very much interested also, as a committee, just to know the developments in your own country, from our government. I think we are fully aware of the developments and the interactions with your respective parliaments and executives in that part of the world. But parliament would need also just to understand from first-hand information what else can we do to assist each other in terms of relationships and you know, facilitation of trade, promotion of common areas of interest, and that will lead to mutual benefits to the two peoples of our country. I think I'll pause here. Baba, you are moving these people around, our honorable guests, and it will be important to know from their side who would lead or who's leading the delegation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We are very pleased to be in South Africa, a democratic country that came out of apartheid and sufferings, to be an example of a democracy in Africa from which other African countries should learn. We are also proud that South Africa is becoming one of the G20. That is also a group which will be shaping the international economic order after this international economic crisis. And we are very happy that we are being in this country for 4 days now. We are learning a lot from the experience of the parliament standing committees. We met back the public accounts committee, and we learned from the experience as a watchdog. And we want to learn from the economic or the finance committee also, the way they handle the discussion of the budget and the follow-up of the budget. We listened 2 days ago to the speech of the Minister of Finance about the midterm budget process. I am Dr. Babikir Mohamed Tom, Deputy Chairperson of the Economic Affairs Committee of the National Assembly in Sudan. I am from the National Congress Party.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'm Jimmy Wongo. I'm the Chairman of Public Accounts Committee in the Southern Sudan Legislative Assembly. you realize that Sudan is actually one country, but there are two systems. There is a fully fledged government, autonomous government in the southern Sudan, which myself as the chair of the Public Accounts Committee represent, and with me from the Public Accounts Committee of the Southern Sudan Legislative Assembly is Honorable Sedit Abe and Honorable Richard Mula and Honorable Daniel Warjog and the Secretary of the Committee, Jurua Harriet. We are very pleased to be in South Africa, and we have enjoyed our 2 day stay here looking around your beautiful city and seeing how much you people have put in terms of effort to arrive to where you have come. Our interactions have been very wonderful. As my colleague Dr. Babikir said, we were there listening to the budget speech of His Excellency the Minister of Finance. Very well done job, which is reflected in the development we have seen. Insofar as your committee is concerned, Mr. Chair, I think the right committee in the Southern Sudan that could have interacted with you well is what we call the Committee of Finance, Economy and Development. Unfortunately, they are not with us here. We only wish they were here. They could have fitted very well in the explanation you have made. However, we as Public Accounts Committee that does the oversight over the finances and expenditure there, we are also very pleased to be listening to you and to be interacting with you. And from our point of view, we'd rather listen to you rather than speaking to you. But Dr. Babikir is well placed to speak to you more about the Sudanese economy in general and how it is developing, because he has been there as a chair before he became a deputy after the agreement. He has been a chair there for a long time, and he's quite an experienced economist, and probably is in the right place more than anybody else. But certainly, a few questions come into the mind of a person. One, the fiscal year here would like to know when it starts and when it ends. And if I listen very carefully to a call, a midterm budget policy statement, yes, which means it's probably halfway through the fiscal year or so. We would like you to throw more light onto that. And with this, maybe if any of the members of the committee from Southern Sudan would like to pose questions, I would allow them to then. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Good morning. I am Honorable Comrade Gorge Mokwai, a member of Sudan People Liberation Movement, as well as in the National Assembly of Sudan, and a member of Economic Affairs Committee in the Parliament. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Maybe what I would like to know, because I've seen a very interesting paper here, is the budget process. That's the budget cycle. Maybe during your explanation, maybe you could try to dwell a lot on it so that we can gain from the experience of the South African National Parliament. Thank you. Richard Mula is my name.
Yeah, thank you very much.
My name is Daniel Warjok. I'm a member of Public Accounts Committee in South Sudan Legislative Assembly. I would like to know about how the budget is being formulated in South Africa by the respective by the Minister of Finance. Do they bring it as in form of a ceiling, or each department drawn its budget according to the needs to its needs, or it is in ceiling? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. My name is Hassan Hilal, member of the DUB, which is the Democratic Unionist Party, party on opposition, and it is the oldest party in Sudan, formulated in 1943. And our principles are democracy, respect of human rights, based on citizenship. So my question is that the fiscal federalism here, I think it is more progressive than what we have, because we have political federalism not accompanied by fiscal federalism or true fiscal federalism. And this created lot of problems. We have localities without funds. We have illegal collections to finance this, to finance the system. So can you just elaborate on this fiscal federalism? Thank you.
Oh, my name is Shirilo Elias Unango from Sudan People Liberation Movement, a member of Economic Committee of National Assembly. Really, we are a people who came out from war 21 years. This is the first time for us to enter the parliament. So what I require here, I want to know something about financial policy of the Republic of South Africa. Thank you very much.
Maybe what we should do, honorable members and colleagues.
Sorry?
Can I continue?
Oh, okay.
Okay, my name is Zainab Ahmad Atayef. I'm a member of Economic Affairs Committee in National Assembly Sudan. My question is that for the role of the committee in budget, is it only to discuss the budget when it comes to the parliament, or there is very engagement of an engagement of the committee for the stages of preparing budget in Ministry of Finance? My second question is about the statement for the Minister of Finance that introduced it last Monday. He said he introduced medium-term budget policy. Medium-term. Can I know that budget policies here in your country divided into terms, quarterly or medium or annual? We in Sudan, Minister of Finance introduced annual budget policy and then introduced quarterly reports or medium reports. But budget is annual budget, and here is medium budget. What can I know? Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you. My name is Fadul Musa Gadi. I'm from Central Sudan, from NCP, the ruling party, and I'm a member of the Economic Affairs Committee. My question is about your the taxation policies and arrangements between the central government and the provinces. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Sylvie Abe, Deputy Chairman for Regional International Cooperation, Southern Sudan Legislative Assembly. And I come from a political party which is a bit small but tough, Democratic Forum. My background is engineering. I may not get into a lot of these financial issues, but I would prefer to highlight a few things about what's happening in Sudan. We have an indicted president in Sudan. The elections are coming in 2010, April. Referendum is nearing 2011. We have what we call a comprehensive peace agreement, CPA, where most of the African countries sign into it, and the Europeans. But all the protocols which are signed or stipulated in that CPA are actually not fully implemented. The government of the North is dragging its feet, and we are getting very frustrated. The world share is creating a problem. And one bad thing about the CPA is the 50% of the contribution, which is divided between North and South, it comes from all the wealth of the South, nothing from the North. We have a bit of insecurity going on. A lot of tough discussions are going all over Africa. We would appreciate if some of the African countries, especially South Africa, pay attention to that, because I personally believe that there's a looming war coming up. Because one of the problems in CPA, they say the government of the Sudan must make unity attractive. But by the fact that the 50% comes only from Southern Sudan, it has begun for making very unattractive. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I'm Secretary of Economic Affairs, National Assembly, Khartoum, Sudan. Thank you.
My name is François Derbisseau. I'm a program manager for a Canadian NGO called the Parliamentary Center, and I'm managing a three-year program in Sudan called Peace Building and Strengthening Parliamentary Institutions. And it's my NGO that's facilitating this initiative. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you very much, honorable members and our guests. You have raised quite a number of questions, but these are questions that we'll be able to respond to. Some of them we may not be able to respond to your satisfaction because we are not ministers of finances. My colleagues would also take some of the questions. I would probably start with some, and then they will come and add and subtract so that you leave here with a little bit of information about ourselves. The starting point I like the question of fiscal federalism, because that will explain everything that we do as parliament, and how do you relate to all different spheres of government budgets as the Committee of Finance in the National Assembly. You might have heard this, and I believe you heard it, because you have met different people, different stakeholders. The language is the same probably throughout. You know, Deputy Chairperson, that the fact that we are considered a miracle nation and a rainbow nation is precisely because of the struggles that the people of South Africa wage to liberate themselves, and how we finally came to agree that the solutions of our own country will be solved by South Africans themselves, and therefore we have to sit down and talk. It was during that process that we also learned the art of persuasiveness, that the ability to negotiate an outcome is your determination to repeat one thing until it makes sense to the other party in different ways, but same message. It was not easy, but it happened. And I think we appreciate that the rest of the continent and the rest of the world also feels that our experience can be imported or exported from where we are sitting to help other nations to overcome the challenges that they are going through. Now, as part of the negotiations and the settlement, South Africa, coming from a history of a colonialism of a special type, where the colonized and the colonized lived in the same borders, excluded from same resources, we had to then say, what kind of a South Africa do you want to create? So the negotiations was a give and take in the main. There were parties that really and strongly so believed that we must have provinces that are autonomous, because politically you'd find that the particular political party has got stronger support in one part of the country, and therefore they would want to see to it that even if they are not necessarily going to be the ruling party at a central level, they could then be given the opportunity to rule themselves at the provincial level, autonomy. The compromise to that was that we have a unitary state with a very strong elements of federalism, but we're a unitary state. There are elements of federalism within a unitary body. I'm giving this background so that we all understand how then the fiscals work. Going to the issue of the fiscal federalism. We then agreed that we should have three different spheres of government, not three different types of government, spheres of government: national government, provincial government, local government. The most important sphere of government to us is local government, because if we say the people shall govern, it is at that level where people determine their own destination. What matters most is access to health facilities, access to water, access to sanitation, access to electricity, access to roads, and so on and so forth. Those things don't happen in abstract. They happen at the local level. So in our constitution, we've got three distinct but interrelated spheres of government: national, provincial, and local. What then we then agreed, which is enshrined in our constitution, is what responsibilities are allocated to what sphere of government. There are national imperatives that cannot be devolved or be executed at the provincial level: issues of national security, defense, the interest of defending South Africa is a national interest, and therefore it's a national competence. The issue of wealth creation and wealth distribution is a national competence. That would then explain why minerals and energy resources is not a competence of provinces, but a competence of national assembly or national government. Provinces, in terms of our policies, are policy implementers, and they are tasked in the main to deal with education, health, and welfare. The economic side of the provinces, even in terms of the budget, accounts for 15%. 85% is for health, education, and social services. That's what the provinces are tasked for. Local government, I've already touched on that, is service delivery. Now, how does the budget work? We were mindful of the fact that not all provinces have got relative comparative economic advantages. They don't have the same. But also, we did not want to divide the country into small enclaves in such a way that we then say, because this province has got mineral resources, it's rich in mines, it will raise taxes and fund for its own operations and activities. Taxation is a national competence also, particularly company taxes. Provinces would then be allowed to do taxation on other issues, perhaps games, gambling, and municipalities also have got their own revenue tax base. Some of the municipalities, particularly the metros, have got capacity to generate on revenue than provinces, some of the provinces. If you take Gauteng, for instance, it's our California, if you were to compare economically with the economy of the U.S., as you know, that California on its own is the biggest economy, probably the fifth biggest economy in the world, but it's within the United States. So housing would account for more than 40% of the wealth of South Africa in tax base. Now, national government is responsible for the division of revenue amongst all spheres of government. But this division of revenue is informed by the priorities of government at all levels. Currently, if you look down to our medium-term budget policy statement, you'll see that over the next 3 years, because we use what we call medium-term budget policy. Medium-term expenditure framework. We budget over 3 years. We think now, as a country, we might need to have a medium-term budget policy framework over 5 years, not 3 years, so that we can project into the next 5 years. And therefore, in terms of certainty of our budget and transparency, each sphere of government can plan based on what the projections would be in the next 5 years. That has helped because it is mostly a very reliable data of information of how the economy is going to perform and therefore what resources are going to be allocated to different spheres of government. In the next 3 years, what we are going to be seeing is that there's going to be a growing portion of the national fiscus towards local government, moving from 7% of the national budget to almost 9%. The decrease is going to come from national. Provinces are remaining constant. If you look into the budget itself, it's about 44%, in fact 44%. Yeah. For the next 3 years. Now, what I'm saying is that in terms of the autonomy of provinces, in terms of the fiscal, Once the budget is there, it is the responsibility of the province and the municipalities to make sure that that which has been budgeted for is actually utilized for that particular purpose. But we don't leave provinces and national or local government just to safeguard the budget, because sometimes this thing called budget, people think it's just to be spent. You know, when you see a budget, we have received money, how do you spend it? We've got what we call in-year monitoring systems that Parliament interface with at the same time. Which comes to the question that the Honourable Member raised today. Do you have an annual budget or a quarterly budget or a half-yearly budget? It's an annual budget, but we've got what we call in-year monitoring. We are able to check from Parliament in terms of the statements that we receive from National Treasury. How is a particular line department at National Parliament, Provincial Parliament, spending its resources, so that you don't wake up at the end of the financial year that one department has overrun the budget by 20 billion. So you must be able to see that. Now the medium-term budget policy statement is in a way an evaluation of how government has performed in the past 6 months in between the financial year, half yearly. But if you budget, you will never budget accurately. When we budgeted now, and most countries probably did not know that there's going to be an economic downturn of the magnitude that we're experiencing, all of us. When the budget was tabled in Parliament, we did not anticipate that there'll be new departments created. Now, in between the fiscal year, it is the responsibility of Parliament and government to come together and say, we are now shifting resources from one program to the other in terms of the priorities of government. Now, there will be what you see as unavoidable, unforeseen and unavoidable expenditure, like disasters. You can never know that there's going to be Hurricane George in Cape Town. Cape Town is a very interesting place. It's a nice city, but its weather can be different from time to time, and you experience all different kind of issues. You may not know that in August, September, in an inland provinces and rural provinces, there's going to be drought that devastates and decimates livestock. How, as government, do you actually intervene? So you may need to shift resources. So the medium-term budget policy statement is to deal with unforeseen circumstances, but also to reprioritize the budget. So that's basically what you've seen in terms of medium-term policy statement. But what makes this medium-term policy statement more important and critical than any other is that it's the actual first budget policy statement under the leadership of the president, the current president of the ruling party, Jacob Zuma. Basically, it's the first direction at the macro level and so on and so forth. Now, let me also just elaborate a bit in terms of the macro issues. Because fiscal policy, as you know, honorable members, is that in the main, it's three elements. It's state expenditure. Two is borrowing. Thirdly, is taxation, revenue generation. That's your macro macro policy. And then it's about fiscal sustainability. To what extent are you able to, like now, our budget deficit is almost 7.6% in terms of the economic crisis. you should then be able to project in the next 3 years or 4 years to say, if you go into the market, domestic and international market, to access funds to deal with the deficit, what is your turnaround strategy to go back to where you are? Now, you can't borrow in the dark. The most dangerous thing is that you borrow but you don't know how you're going to repay. Otherwise, you become like a small economy that is debt trapped. It's never able to come out of it, and you lose your, it's not even credibility. You lose your, there's a difference between, from where I'm sitting, independence and freedom. You can be free but not independent. If you lose your independence, then you're not free. And in the world system where we live, that independence is mostly dependent on your ability to can sustain your fiscal stability. Now, the medium-term policy statement, the annual budget, also it makes us as parliament to know where we are going, why would the executive want to borrow, for what reason, are they borrowing for consumption, are they borrowing for development. Parliament can now, in terms of the powers that we have, refuse government or the executive to do things that will not be in the interest of future generations in terms of borrowing. So I thought I should just elaborate a little bit along those lines. The role of the committee in terms of budget preparation, maybe I should leave it to Honorable Spitzer and other members here. Let me pause here.
Thank you, Chair Justin. You have taken most of the questions that have been asked, even those that we wanted to respond to. Good morning to the delegation. Chairperson, I wanted to respond, but you have touched on the issue of our budget being annual budget or monthly budget. I think the chairperson has covered that quite okay, I just wanted to indicate that before the ANC took over in 1994, the then previous government used to have an annual budgeting process. And when we took over, we decided that kind of budgeting was limiting the state in terms of investing in infrastructure and other related matters. So the ANC decided that it would be better to budget for a three-year period term, which will give confidence to investors and the public in terms of how their monies are going to be spent by the state. That allowed the government to engage in private partnerships of a long term in terms of the contracts that they engaged on. Chairperson, I just wanted to highlight that briefly. And the process of public participation during the budget process is one of the crucial components of our budget process. As the chairperson was saying, that the departments after, let's say this is a new government that was elected in 2009 May, they look into the manifesto of the leading party in government and try and translate those commitments of the leading party into practical programs of the government. In doing so, they engage different stakeholders in civil society, your NGOs, your political parties, labor, business, and so on, in terms of getting their inputs as to what needs to be prioritized, especially in this current situation that we are faced with. of economic downturn. So the public participate in that process of identifying issues that needs to be prioritized by government. And they participate through this committee, the Finance Committee, the Appropriations Committee, and other committees of Parliament that deal with specific issues, maybe issues of health, issues of education, and so on. So they do participate in that process. And the Constitution of South Africa provides for that. And it further states that this Parliament, to ensure that public views are taken into consideration, must develop a legislation that will guide the members of Parliament in terms of how to integrate the inputs of the public in that process. Hence, this Parliament passed a legislation on Money Bills Amendment Act, which gives us guidelines in terms of how can we integrate those inputs from the public. Previously, it has been an issue because we'll have a public participating in budget processes, but at the end, this Parliament could not amend the budget. We listened to them, and after that, we didn't have powers to amend the budget. But currently, due to the this legislation, we will now have the powers to amend the budget. And I'm not going to dwell much on what the chairperson has outlined in terms of those issues. In terms of transparency and other issues relating to budget spending and so on, we have a legislation called Public Finance Management Act, which outlines clearly as to what is the role of provinces, what is the role of National Treasury, and what is expected of these spheres of government in terms of how the monies of state are utilized. So we have that legislation that guides, and it deals with issues of transparency. It also includes the issues of reporting and accountability from those who are tasked with that responsibility in their departments. Chairperson, there was a question on taxation policies. I don't know whether we need to say what policies do we have or what is the process in terms of how the state collects the taxes and where do those monies go. In terms of the broad framework around the issues of tax policy, it's a central government responsibility. It's the one that collects revenues or taxes from individuals and companies. It's the one that establishes or creates legislations around issues of taxes, who must be taxed and how much and so on. So that function is the function of the national government, and it's the one that decides after collecting all those monies where those monies are allocated.
If you never mind, then my question is the needs of the provinces in this taxation system. This is my interest.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah. Actually, is there are power to the provinces to levy taxes. There is power to the localities to also put taxes. And there are the central government power to have VAT and other taxes. There is some sort of conflict of interest. The macroeconomic policy of the government is to encourage investment and to make it easy for businesses to grow and so on. So if a businessman is taxed at three levels of government, I know that you said the province responsibility is education and safety limited role, and they tax gambling and other maybe things. Or the local government may tax houses or something like that. There is a right for each level of government to levy taxes. There is some conflict of interest. We want to limit and not to repeat and not to duplicate taxes.
so that make it hard for businesses to develop. We want to know these limits.
Add on what my colleague said here in terms of the fiscals before I talk about the taxes. Over and above the Public Finance Management Act, we also have what we call the Finance and Fiscal Commission. It's an independent body. That body, its main task and responsibilities is to advise government on the matter of division of revenue. It takes into consideration spatial development issues. It takes into consideration GINCO efficiency of provinces. It took into consideration the issues of infrastructure development and infrastructure backlog. So that as you begin to budget, you must look which province is more backward, if one were to use that term, in terms of social economic infrastructure. Rural provinces would need more resources to build schools because they are not like Western Cape. Historically, this is one of the most developed areas. And therefore, when you use your Finance and Fiscal Commission formula, you need to look into the different elements that will require specific attention in terms of your division of revenue from national. But also, in that process, as much as national that decides, there's a forum where the Minister of Finance sits with ministers of finance at the provincial level. They call it budget council. Side by side of the budget council, there's what we call the budget forum. The budget forum is a body where even then mayors of metros sit. It's an extension of the budget council. It's almost a statutory body, because its decisions, once endorsed by cabinet, are implemented throughout government. So I thought I should just elaborate a little bit in terms of how the budget works. The ability of provinces, you see, when we speak about government liability, it doesn't matter whether one province has borrowed money from a development bank or from an international institution. When you actually do an accumulative debt of a country, it will take into consideration what provinces have been doing, if you allow them to do that. So for a province who can go out and lend money, it must go through what you call the budget forum. The budget forum must approve. For instance, Gauteng province, when it came with the concept of Gautrain, which is a very, very important social economic infrastructure, but more than anything else, it's an economic infrastructure. For it to have access and for national parliament to budget for that, the budget forum had to agree that because we are going to take, say, 5 to 10 billion rand out of the fiscal and give it to Gauteng, other provinces must also understand why the importance of that. It can't be just Trevor Manuel or Pravin Gordhan with the minister or provincial minister of finance agreeing on that issue. It's a collective decision of all ministers of finances. But more than anything, it's going to be a collective of the executive at national level to understand exactly what is going to happen. Now, in terms of taxation, provinces have got limited areas of where they can actually collect taxes. They are allowed to do tourism levy. For instance, hotels over and above 1,600 that they charge for room per night, they can add a tourism levy of another percent. That's a provincial way of generating revenue. Gambling, that's one part of it. Traffic fines, they go into the provincial fiscal. It's one of generating revenue. In fact, I think their biggest source of revenue is the traffic fines, licensing. Yeah, licensing. It's not just traffic, it's licensing, basically. So that's the biggest revenue. The Department of Transport in provinces, when they budget, when provinces budget and they say revenue on revenue collection, it will not be even 5% in other provinces, less than 3% of what the total budget is going to be. So I don't know if that answers your question. We think there's merit. We think there's a merit in this system. Because it allows the country to share from a common pool of resources. If you generate 40% of the economic activities in the country, it doesn't mean that you must get 40% back into your fiscal. We spread it evenly throughout the country. I think that's the essence of what you wanted to say. The picture like that says everything is chocolate coated here. Parliament is Parliament, still has serious challenges in terms of budgetary matters, particularly to execute its oversight mandate. And I think it's historical because the budget was done and completed at the executive level. It disadvantaged Parliament very, very seriously. Because if you are to oversight an institution, all institutions like this Committee of Finance, it's not just about the Department of Finance. Our role is to monitor even the activities of financial institutions, banks, development finance institutions, the revenue services, financial services board, you know, all those institutions that deals with anything that has to do with the economy, basically, is the responsibility of Parliament through this committee. What it means is that this committee must be well-resourced in terms of research capacity, in terms of oversight visits, on-site visits, interaction with the electorate from time to time. Budget allocations of Parliament have not been to the extent that it will allow Parliament to do this thing in the past 15 years. But given the kind of legislation we have now, Parliament can speak for itself and for everybody. Lastly, as much as we work and play an oversight role, it has not been an adversarial relationship. You know the state has three legs to stand on. It's a triangle, it's a troika. It's Parliament, executive, and the judiciary. Each must remain independent. But if you were to look into this matter very closely, the two are sub-programs of Parliament, because Parliament is the only elected body. And out of Parliament, you then put legislation to establish this other two. They are independent, but Parliament is paramount. Now, over the years, I think, given the South African experience, South African background, there were many pieces of legislation that needed to be changed. So the first 15 years of Parliament was more about legislation and policy making and turning around the South African situation so that it can reflect what the new South Africa should look like. Now, this fourth Parliament was actually, and the President has said, is an activist Parliament. It means it's no more long about policy evolution and policy making. It's about policy implementation. What it means is that parliamentarians must be more outside than in here to make sure that the policies that were passed here, the executive is implementing. Because if we sit here and we don't have time to monitor what is going on, you'll then see the kinds of things that we've been seeing in the past 6 months. Service delivery process. It means that parliamentarians have not been aware. It means that parliamentarians, people have not had a voice to speak on their behalf in terms of the failures of government. So Parliament has to begin to play that particular role. And I think the next 5 years is going to be more around those issues of making sure that policies implemented that rather than to be saying we're making new policies in Parliament. Therefore, the budget of Parliament should be skewed towards activism of Parliament. So basically, that's the last contribution that I thought we should share with you, honourable members. And I hope you'll have a very fruitful interaction with the rest of our colleagues in this Parliament. But also, don't overwork yourself. We know that you've got serious programs back at home. It might be time also just to take it easy and relax a little bit, so that when you go back home, you are re-energized and they can see a new person in you before you get tired again. Thank you very much.
Yeah, before.